Here we go. Yeah, okay. Erev Tisha B'Av, kind of. Tisha B'Av this year, the 9th of Av, comes out on Shabbos, but it is pushed off. The fast is pushed off till Sunday. So the truth is we are kind of Erev Tisha B'Av, 2 days before Tisha B'Av. So what we'll speak about today, of course, will be Inyanei Dioma, relevant to Tisha B'Av. But of course, we can't speak about Tisha B'Av without speaking about the three-week period, beginning with the 17th of Tammuz. And we did already start to speak about the 17th of Tammuz and Tisha B'Av. Remember, a few weeks ago, we spoke about the breaking of the Luchos, and then, of course, the exile from the land. We focused more on the breaking of the Luchos, and today we'll focus a little bit more on the Gullus, on what exile is. And in following the style, the philosophical slash Kabbalistic style of the Ramchal, as Rav Moshe Shapiro is so expert in explicating and explaining, we will try to understand how all those events that occur to the Jewish people as a nation also take place, also are experienced by every single person in the course of their life. There's the shattering of the Luchos, the breaking of the Luchos, that's the 17th of Tammuz in everybody's life. There is the exile and dispersion and enslavement in everybody's life. And of course, on Tisha B'Av, the Chazal say, that Mashiach was born. But now, this is not taken literally that there's some Mashiach waiting around for the last 2,000 years. He's a 2,000-year-old man. We're not talking about that. In fact, in the disputation at Barcelona that the Rambam was forced to engage, Ramban was forced to engage in with Pablo Cristiani, a converted Jew, one of the proofs for Christianity that was, you know, presented by Pablo Cristiani was the birth of the Messiah at the time of the destruction, which is when they placed their Messiah. And Ramban openly says, and you know, he was in the chain of Kabbalah, he was among the major links of the transmission of Kabbalah. He said, this is metaphor. It means, just like we say, the seeds of hope are rooted in, you know, destruction, from, you know, that hope springs forth from destruction. That's what we mean it metaphorically, that the possibility for Mashiach exists in the destruction itself. And that's what we will focus on. There's no question. Chazal say that. So Mashiach was born on Tisha B'Av. It means in the depths. From the depths comes the beginning of the return upwards. And we gave the mashal, right? When Moshe Shapiro spoke in Amsterdam, he brought the mashal of the rainbow, right? When Hashem intends to destroy the world, but will not, because he promised that he will never destroy the world again, he shows us a rainbow in the sky, a bow, like a bow and arrow, a bow. But if the messages, as we would, you know, perhaps think at first glance that Hashem isn't going to destroy the world, but he really would, because we really deserve it. So that would be the image of an archer facing their bow at their opponent and pulling back the arrow and shooting their opponent. The problem is that the bow that we see in the sky after a rain, you know, which implies a mabul, is facing in the wrong direction. The angle of the bow is not facing down to humanity, to earth. It's not like Hashem is the archer shooting arrows at us. Actually, in the reverse. We have the bow, but we're not shooting arrows at a Kadosh Baruch Hu. The message is not that I want to destroy you because you're shooting arrows at me. The message is Hashem is telling us something about the covenant, the bris he made, that the world will go on, not something about anger. This is not a message of anger and why I want to destroy you. The concept of the bow is, I will not destroy you. And so the bow is read in a completely different way. Ramesha explained that when we hold the bow in our hands, to the degree and with the force, whatever force we use to pull that line back away, so to speak. In other words, pull away from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that force itself of distance, that negative force, that force away, is the very force that drives the arrow straight back directly to its source, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. To the degree that we fall, that fall itself propels the return. So in Tisha B'Av, in the destruction or in the Chorban, are the seeds of Chibor. It's the same word. Korban, Chibor, switching around. We'll speak about these words. So we're going to speak about Chibor, meaning connection, reunion, like Chaverim, friends, are in the Korban, in the reverse of the cherev, that which slices and separates the head from the body. In any case, what we're going to speak about today is are a couple of basic notions that Chazal constantly refer to in trying to explain to us the Churban and the Golus, both on a national scale and on a personal scale, and how the seeds of redemption or return are embedded in them. The words we're going to use, okay, the words we're going to work with today, big words, words that relate to Tammuz and Av, words that relate to the sin of the breaking of the Luchos, the Egel, and the sin of the spies, words that are alluded to in Eicha itself, are the words of Re'iya, sight, and Shmiya, hearing. Okay? In Eicha, you know this. It goes in alphabetical order. The three middle chapters, the Pei and the Ayin, are reversed, correct? In the Hebrew alphabet, the I comes before the mouth. Ayin, Peh. The Ayin comes before the Peh. The I, what we see, should precede what we say, what we speak about. But in Eicha, they're alluding to the Churban, the destruction, is a function of this transposing, really, that this what we do, what Klal Yisrael did and what we do, is we put our mouth before our eyes, the peh before the ayin, or we speak of what we haven't seen. Our speech precedes, or it takes the place of proper sight, and we will speak about this idea, re'iya, sight, and shmiya, hearing. And then we're going to look into some ideas from the Ari and the Gra, of course, in the chain of Kabbalah, regarding the months of Tammuz and Av, and how that relates to seeing and to hearing, and also a Kabbalistic idea where the Ramesha Shapira talks about often, which is the name Yud Ke Vav Ke, Hashem's name, has 12 different permutations, because it's 3 times 4, because the He is repeated, the He is twice. So it's 3 times 4. There's 12 different permutations in Yud Ke Vav Ke, and each month has its own permutation, and the permutations of Tammuz and Av. It all comes back to seeing and hearing. Okay? This is the sin, in other words, the destruction, the Churban of a person is identified, is described in terms of the shortcoming, the weakness in the way they see and the weakness in the way we hear, and the redemption, the salvation, the tikkun is the same. We're going to start out with the Maharal. The Maharal explains the notion of Golus, and he explains that Golus has 3 elements to it, and think about the Golus of Klal Yisrael, but of course think about the Golus of a person. In fact, let me read you. Moshe Shapiro says it so beautifully. He says the following. He talks about that he speaks about the Churban, and we said the breaking of the Luchos and the Churban, in other words, the unraveling or the destruction of Klal Yisrael. And he says, and this applies to every single person in their day-to-day life. And he says, Al Kain, therefore, Kol Adam Shechashesh O Margish, any person who suspects or actually feels, Benafsho, in their nefesh, in their soul, Shehu B'matzav Shel Churban, that he himself is in a state of Churban, O B'matzav Sheholech Likrat Churban, or in a state where he's approaching, he's veering, he's teetering on Churban, on destruction of the self, and wants to protect himself from this, he must look carefully and understand the yesod, the basis of Churban, according to how the Mishnah describes it, as the 5 things that happened on Shavuot B'Tammuz, which we already spoke about, and the 5 things that happened on Tisha B'Av. We said, of course, the 5 things that happened on Shavuot B'Tammuz, the beginning of Churban, have to do with the shattering of the Luchos, which we're going to speak about as Re'iya and sight, and the shattering and the loss of Eretz Yisrael, the loss of, we're going to speak about proper hearing. So even he explains, he openly always talks like this, that it's a personal experience, and Chazal guide us through understanding it by speaking about Klal Yisrael, but it applies to the individual. So the Maral starts out in Netzach. This is the first, this Sefer Netzach Yisrael. By the way, this whole series is done by Rabbi Yeshua Hartman, and it's Ari Bergman's brother-in-law. And he put the writings of the Maral together with the notes and the comments. Anyway, he says, the Maral says like this. Maral says that there are 3 aspects to Churban, but the first thing to understand is that Churban itself, our Golus itself, is not a natural state and is only temporary and cannot exist indefinitely. And therefore, if a person or a Klal Yisrael are in a state of Churban, they must know that they will exit that state. They will come out of it. It's a phase we pass through. It's the Yerida, the descent in order to go up. And this is implied in the words that Hashem spoke to Avraham when he told him first that his descendants would go into exile, would be dispersed, and would be redeemed. And the words he used is back there by the Bris Ben Hapsarim, is Yadoa Teda, Ki Ger Yezarecha. You shall surely know. The double lashon of Yadoa Teda is you should know that they will go into Golus. But Teda is future. You shall know also that they will be redeemed after that. That's built in. The Golus and the redemption are linked together. There is no such thing as a descent into Golus and a total loss, and it's all over. So he says that there are three aspects to Golus, and from each of them there will be an exit, because each of them are unnatural to the metzius of a human being, to the existence, the basic God-like Tzelem Elohim existence of a human being cannot exist in the state of Golus. It's not the natural state of man. And a human being, when they find themselves in that state, cannot survive in that state. The human being will seek ways to extricate himself. These three states are, number one, the first state is that there is a, and he brings this, by the way, the pasuk that we're going to work on is from Tefillah. This is the Amida of Shachris, when every day we say, Teka b'shofar gadol l'cheroseinu, that's one state, a great shofar for our freedom. That state is going to refer to enslavement. When a person is not free, that means that they are not free to follow their own wishes. They are not free to be the master of their choices. They are compelled to follow somebody else's, you know, directions and live out somebody else's interests. In other words, a human being, by nature, orders their life by certain principles, hopefully. To have no principles at all, we're going to speak about, that's a different gullus, that's pizur, totally scattered. But normally a human being has, it's ordering principles to their life. That's what our Torah is for, that's what our chinuch is for. To order our life according to principles. When we cannot live by those principles, that's called avdus. We're enslaved to forces greater than ourselves. They might be an external government, or they might be our own weakness and lack of discipline and impulsivity that enslaves us to act out in a way that is not in line with the principles that we really order our life by. Okay, so this is, the first is teka b'shofar gadol l'cheroseinu, freedom from other peoples or other forces' dominion above us. Okay, and then v'son neis l'kabit gluyaseinu. That's the centerpiece. So, raise a banner to gather in all the places that we are, our gullus, our exile. Now that is gathering in the dispersion. The central piece of gullus is pizur. Am echad, right? We are described as mufuzar, spread out. Pizur is scattered all over the place. That's in a human being, where our actions are just, you know, disconnected and disjointed reactions to different things as they arise, some good, some bad, whatever moves us at the moment, whatever spirit, you know. That is gathering it all in together so that we are not scattered, but we are a single coherent entity that lives, again, by those ordering principles. And then we say, that replaces to, that relates to being in our place, le'artzeinu, to our land, being out of our place. So Golus has three aspects. We are out of our place. We are in a different foreign place. It is unfamiliar to us. And in this foreign place, the place where we shouldn't be, we are scattered. We're all over the place, and we are enslaved. These are three aspects of Golus. And in each three of these aspects, as it is kind of like not predetermined, but inevitable for a human being to some degree or the other, as it was for Klal Yisrael, to find themselves in these states. So it is inevitable, it is guaranteed that these states will come to an end and we will be extricated from these states. We will be returned to a land, we will be under our own dominion, and we will have, our lives will become, as we talked about, Jonathan Rosenblum wrote a fantastic article about the breaching of the walls. He explains that Yerushalayim in its, and this is also from Rashi Shapiro, in its proper form is a Yerushus HaYochid, its private domain. It has gates and walls. So too, when we are redeemed, in other words, when we pull ourselves back from a state of galus, our lives are protected. They are ordered. They have a specific, we exist in what we call a Rishus HaYachad, a private domain where we and our principles govern. We are not enslaved and we are not scattered. These are the three human forms of Chorban as they are national forms of Chorban. And if a person feels that they're in one of these states or perhaps teetering on one of these states, we look at how it came to be. So this is the end result. This is Gullus. This is Tisha B'Av. How did it came to be? How did it come to be? That's how Eicha starts out. How did it come to be? And Eicha tells you by the very structure of the Prakim, because we put our mouths before our eyes. So how does that work? So we go back to a topic. We go back to Shavas Thomas and talk about the Luchos. And not necessarily their shattering as much as the nature of the Luchos, how Chazal talk about them and what that means. When Hashem spoke at Har Sinai, 40 days before Moshe came down with the Luchos, it says there that the Jewish people saw the sounds, right? You all know this? Roim es hakolos. It deserves a little time to try to understand what that means. Roim et hakolot, seeing the sounds. Okay. Actually, the entire Bria of this world is a function of Hashem speaking, of sound. Vayomer Elokim, Yehi Ar. We say it every day. Baruch at Hashem, Elokeinu Melech Olam, Shahakol Nihyeh Bidvaro. Everything became into existence with Hashem's word, right? Speaking itself Hashem's speech brings life into existence. In fact, we say also in Shabbos morning, we say kihu amar vayehi, because he spoke and it was. The entire Bria is amira, is speech. What that means is, just like you walk into a restaurant and, there's a world famous chef and you sit down and they present, the most magnificent, presented and most delicious food. That food, we can say, speaks of the talent of the chef. The food doesn't exist independently. It didn't just materialize on my plate. Obviously, everybody knows that it's a product of somebody's creativity, somebody's thought, and somebody's hard work, and so when somebody's instructions, there's a whole kitchen back there, somebody's giving instructions. In other words, any action, any davar is a dibur, correct? That's why the word is the same word. A davar is a dibur. Anything that exists is clearly an expression of somebody's dibur, speech. By the way, when we speak of speech, Hashem doesn't have a speaking apparatus like we know it, with a tongue and a mouth and an upper palate and all of that. When we say Hashem speaks, it means conveying His will. It means making His will known. That's called speaking. When we speak, we make our will known. So when Hashem speaks, it means Hashem made His will knowable to the world through His creations. So when we think about the creations of Hashem, then it is possible through them to know what Hashem wants. So a davar is a dibur. When Hashem spoke the dibros, that those words that were eventually found themselves on the luchos, made the luchos. They became part of the luchos. Now we'll speak about that in a minute, but first I just want to tell you that in science today, there's so much, it's still a tiny drop, but scientists, physicists themselves are becoming aware that the world in its complexity speaks of a a will of an intellect, of a active mind, you know, of the Creator that is speaking to us. And here he quotes here. This is Gerald Schroeder's book. Knighted mathematician Sir James Jeans paralleled this insight. He had quoted something from Proverbs or Mishlei in his book, The Mysterious Universe. He says, there is a wide measure of agreement, which on the physical side of science approaches almost unanimity, that the stream of knowledge is heading towards a non-mechanical reality. In other words, the universe begins to look more like a great thought than a great machine. Here's another interesting quote. He writes, J.A. Wheeler, during a BBC special, The Creation of the Universe, summarized the quest for ultimate reality. To my mind, there must be at the bottom of it all, not an utterly simple equation, but an utterly simple idea. And to me, that idea, when we finally discover it, will be so compelling and so inevitable, so beautiful, we will say to each other, how could it have ever been otherwise? There's a lot of interesting things in this book, although I not necessarily agree with his premise, but the interesting information in the book. In any case, dibor is davar, is a word. Chazal say that when Hashem uttered, so to speak, or made his will known through the dibros, the words, the sounds, reverberated through the camp and then embedded themselves on the luchos. Now, the Moshe came down with the luchos 40 days later. But the words of the dibros were engraved in the luchos. They were not written on the luchos, which means the luchos and the words were one. And Chazal say, if anybody would see the luchos, they would hear the dibros being spoken. Now, those luchos were broken, the pieces were picked up, put in the aron along with the second luchos. But what Chazal are trying to say, and to apply this to ourselves personally, is that the word of Hashem spoke so clearly, we were able to see with our eyes, not the davar, but the dibor, which is not that hard to do, even in our day-to-day life in certain circumstances, like the food on the plate. Or like a magnificent building. We hear, we know it didn't come from nowhere. We can hear the architect speaking. We can see what it was that they were thinking. It's not that hard. In other words, seeing what we hear is something we ourselves experience. The luchos, Chazal always say, this is classic, it's referred to in many places. It's even Hashem says that we say, kosveim aluach libechem, write them on the luchos, the tablet, so to speak, of our hearts. Our hearts are referred to as the luchos. By the way, he writes, Rami Shapiro, that he's very offended that in modern Israeli language, a luach is a blackboard which is created for the purpose of erasing something. Whereas our concept of luchos is the exact opposite. The words are engraved on the stone, which means there is no separation between the material, the medium, and the message.
That's a smart
one. Now, the idea here is that the first luchos, in other words, the goal, in other words, the ideal, in other words, what we're trying to get back to, in other words, every distance, every move away from this is korban. To whatever degree we move away from this, we are in a state of korban. This we're talking about is where the luchos and the words are one. That means that a person sees, right? It rather hears what they see. It's so clear to them. Another way of saying it is that our hearts, the luchos, and Hashem's will are inseparable. What we love and what is true are inseparable for us. It's one and the same. Now, in certain areas in our life, this is for sure the case. There's no question about it. What we love and what we know to be true are the same. For example, our lives, okay? If somebody presents a magnificent, again, let's say, plate of food, it's the most gorgeous thing we've ever seen, and we're dying to taste it, and, you know, it's an experience waiting for us, and then somebody just murmurs into our ear, by the way, this whole plate is laced with arsenic because the chef is trying to kill you, okay? Now, all of a sudden, what we know and what we want are the same. We don't want to eat this food. All of a sudden the desire is gone because we see, okay, what we see and what we know are, one for us, okay? We hear the negative intention, that's what's to murder us, chas v'shalom, and then we see it completely differently. It doesn't look good anymore. So that truth, when it's heard, is what we see. So obviously what's supposed to happen is the seeing is supposed to come before the speaking, so to speak. In other words, how we interpret something. What we say is how we interpret something, right? He says here that at Har Sinai, in other words, in the ultimate state, the state from which everything else is measured, Korban is measured in relative to that state, the how connected the two are, that what we see is what we hear, right? He says, of course, now the state of Korban can be spoken of like this. We do see the dibor, the words, you know, we do see the words. When we see something, we see the words, but it's not the words of Hashem. We hear our own voices. We see the sounds of our own voices. We see the sounds of how we've interpreted things. That's what we see.
I see what you mean.
I see what you mean, exactly. Obviously, you know about the Meraglim. They spoke of, in other words, they saw from their own perspective, and therefore what they saw spoke of, you know, was also a dibor. What they saw was also the words, but it wasn't the words of Hashem. It was the words that they themselves had already created from their own minds. Look, all the Meraglim and Kalev and Yeshua went to Hebron. So what did the Meraglim see in Hebron? Huge physical giants that terrified them. And of course, they brought back all those huge fruits. But Kalev and Yeshua also were in Hebron. Did they see the giants? Of course they saw the giants. Which giants? They saw the Avos and the Imos and the Maris and Machpelah. That's where they went to Davin. So they saw giants of a different sort, spiritual giants. It is true that Eretz Yisrael is a land that's alive and produces extremes of all sorts. But the matter is how we see that is up to, you know, depends on how clear we are. Yeshua and Kalev were not fazed by the giants because they trust in HaKadosh Baruch Hu that giant means nothing. Look at David and Goliath. It's irrelevant. And by the way, the very fact that their cities were fortified was not a reason to fear. Moshe said, check if their cities are fortified. That was not a reason to fear them. That was a reason to be secure, because if they fortified their cities, that means they were insecure and they were afraid. They were not living in open territory. They were closing themselves off. As later on, Rachav said to Yeshua, our hearts are melting 40 years later. Our hearts are melting. We're in terror. So they saw the fortified cities and the giants. It didn't faze them. Then they saw the Avos and the Imahos, and that inspired them. So what happened there? Everybody saw the same thing. What happened there is that their sight, their being able to see things it had not been interfered with. It had not been disrupted by what? Their own fears, their own weakness, their own, you know, misunderstanding of things. So, that being the case, when we speak about hearing, seeing the sounds is something we all experience in our life, and to the degree that we see Hashem's dibur as the explanation for things, that's a state of ge'ula. Any movement away from that becomes a state of galus. Okay, so the breaking of the luchos is not seeing Hashem's dibor correctly. What did they interject between the dibor and their ability to hear it correctly? They put in something of their own making. That was the egel. Now, there's another aspect to dibor here. Here is seeing the sounds that is associated with total geula, being free, being connected to what's correct and being free to follow without anything disrupting that, primarily our own misinterpretations of things. In other words, Hashem warns us in the second Dibra not to make a tselem, basically. Not to make some other image in place of God, that other representation is what we hear. You know, its principles are what we hear. So why does Hashem not want us to make a tselem? Because in the beginning of Bereishis, Hashem already told us, "B'tzelem Elokim, baras Adam." We are the tzelem. A human being is capable of being a tzelem Elokim. So then to take from the human being that part of them which does not see everything. How do we talk about idols? They have eyes that don't see, and ears that don't hear, and hands, right? So we take that aspect of the human being which is limited, right? Which doesn't know everything, which doesn't understand everything. And then we raise it up to being a god. And then that becomes our explanation for life. limitation and blindness, and that explains life to us, and then we make decisions based on that. That's called making out of ourselves a tzelem, out of the weakest part of ourselves, a tzelem, and putting that in the Beis HaMikdash, and that becomes how we respond to everything and how we judge things. Now, there's another aspect to Shmiah, to hearing correctly, and that is that the word Shama, okay, the word Shama is used in Shmuel, to Sefer Shmuel, here it is. Hold on one sec. I have to find it in here. It's when Shmuel wanted to gather. Here it is. When Shmuel wanted to gather, it's in Shmuel Aleph Perek Tesvav Pasuk Dalid, gather or assemble Klal Yisrael. The pasuk, the word that is used is Vayishama. Vayishama Shaul Esa'am. Vayishama Shaul Esa'am. Shaul gathered or assembled the nations, the individuals into a nation. He explains that the word Shmia and the word Vayishama, assembling, very, you know, they're obviously exactly, they're working with the same concept. When we hear a sound, that means nothing. When we hear a few sounds together, we get words. A few words together linked become a sentence. A few sentences together become an idea. Hearing is a union. It's an assembling of individual sounds. Think about it. If you hear a foreign language, you're hearing lots of sounds. It means nothing. There's no hearing. You don't hear anything. You don't hear anything. You know, when we say we hear, we kind of use that word synonymously with understanding. So understanding comes from gathering together all the different sounds. So v'yeshama shol is shol, gather together. Hearing is a gathering together of independent sounds that make a whole. So when we speak about hearing and seeing the words, seeing, the word re'ia is the same as the word ra'aya, a proof. A proof. So what we're saying, we're putting the two together, seeing the sounds, where the seeing and the hearing are one. Ra'ayon. An idea. When Hashem spoke, when Hashem's will was clearly knowable, if we allow Hashem's will to be clearly knowable, we see what we see, like the food on the plate, which speaks of the chef, is a proof of the dibur, of the will, of the intention, of the idea, of the effort of the person who created that thing. The davar and the dibur, the re'ia is the raya, and the shmia is the vayishama, the gathering. In other words, when we see correctly, when everything we see speaks of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and there's no interference there, then everything we see begins to all become part, like this physicist said, of one great idea. The entire universe is beginning to sound like one great idea, one single truth that is the core of everything. And all the different pieces of life, of experience, and the Bria physically and emotionally for a person and intellectually, every part comes together. And that's the element of that reunion is the opposite of Golus. That's pulling the Golus is scattered and enslaved and out of place. So when hearing and seeing comes back together, so that's the return. That's the ingathering where we are no longer enslaved to what? To the tzelem that we ourselves made of our own limitations. We are not under someone else's rule, so to speak. Whose rule? Our own. Blindness and ignorance and laziness, or other nations, of course. We are not scattered, which means a disjointed jumble of choices and reactions that has, you know, some good and some bad, all trying to, you know, fight for, you know, the moment. And we're not out of place. We're not out of our land. We're in our place. We're where we should be. This we feel. That's when we feel things are right. And now remember the Maharal said, any state of gullus has within it the state of Geula. It is temporary. It is not natural to the Metzius of the Tzelem Elokim to exist in such a state. And when a human being is in such a state, we cannot take it. We take efforts to fix it. Slaves rebel. People want to have, want to feel they're consistent. People don't like being haphazard all over the place, no control. We can't live like that. We take efforts to fix it. Everybody's always going from a state of gullus to a state of geula, but it fluctuates, gullus, geula. It's all becomes, you know, a haphazard mix, but slowly but surely, as a person gets themselves together, it becomes more and more consistent. Now, to take it to the next step, churban, being the disillusion, the scattering, the word churban comes from also the shorish of the word charava, dry. Anything dry crumbles. There's two examples he brings here. In Tehillim, it speaks about charbone kayetz, from the same shoresh, charbone kayetz, the dryness of the summer where you pick up a clump of dirt and instead of being moist, it crumbles into dust. And Yaakov, speaking about the dryness of winter, really, of frost, of cold, says to Lavan, achalani chorev, the frost ate away at me, but he calls it chorev, also the same dry, crumbling type of, coldness, is hot or cold. But the concept of Churban is the separation of things. The concept of renewal, of reunion, is Vayishama, the gathering. And as we said, the opposite of Churban, and you see this very often, that a Shorish has its one meaning and its opposite, is Chibur, a reunion, a connection, Chaverim, Chabura, right? Chevra, it's the same. That's the opposite of Churban. What's interesting is that this idea of seeing the sounds of sight and hearing of these two primary forces in a human being which determine whether they're in galus or geula are the first forces that we encounter in the birth of the Shvatim. Now this is from the Arizal and the Vilna Gaon. So whenever you're going to hear good things. The Shvatim, the 12 tribes, are associated with the 12 months of the year. Okay? There are many 12s. One of the associations, that the Shvatim, are associated with the months of the year. But not according to the Arizal and the Gra, not according to the order in which they were born, rather according to the order that they camped around the Mishkan with the Aron. So, where they camped in a formation, and they traveled in a formation. The first, there were three Shvatim on north, south, east, and west. When it was time to travel, the first camp, there were three, that would pull out and travel first, were the Shvatim of Yehuda, and Yisachar, and Zevulun. They camped together, and they traveled first. Now, Yehuda, being the first to travel, is associated with the first month, which is Nisan, and Yisachar and Zevulun are associated with Iyar and Sivan, which is a whole discussion in and of itself, which we're not going to do now. But Yehuda is Nisan, Yisachar is Iyar, and Zevulun is Sivan. So what does that make the next three Shvatim? The next three Shvatim to travel were Reuven, Shimon, and Gad. So what month are they?
Tammuz,
Av, and Elul. So Reuven is Tammuz. Tammuz is the breaking of the Luchos. Why was he called Reuven? Ra'a Hashem Ba'anyi. Tammuz is Re'iyah, it's seeing of the actual dispersion. Tisha B'Av is the next month. That's associated with Shimon. Why is he called Shimon? Shama Hashem. Okay, Kitznua Anochi. Now, To take it even further, this is unique of Moshe. He explains that Torah Shebichsav, what was given in Tammuz, okay, the Luchos, are appreciated through Re'iyah, through seeing. You read Torah. But Torah Shebaal Peh, which starts after Tisha B'Av, when there's a Churban, that's when Torah Shebaal Peh really became relevant, right? We weren't supposed to write it. It was written out of necessity, out of urgency, because of the dispersion. But the nature of Torah Shebaal Peh is heard, Shmia. That's Tisha B'Av. Now, the difference between seeing and hearing is that which one is more expansive? Which one leads to more possibilities? Hearing. Seeing, you only see the spoken word. Torah Shebaal Peh is the spoken word. Where do we get all the layers and layers and layers from? Torah Shebaal Peh. The difference about Torah Shebaal Peh and Torah Shebaal Peh is because Torah Shebaal Peh is here heard. It was never meant to be written and seen. It was meant to be conveyed verbally and heard from one teacher to a student. The student heard from the teacher, heard. when you hear words, unlike when you see specific words written, you are not only hearing the words themselves, you're hearing the speaker and how those words affect the speaker, what those words mean to the speaker in the nuances of how the words are, of the concepts are explained. You're hearing the essence of the speaker themselves. In other words, you're hearing the person and how they've integrated the words and how they've applied them. And that's why there are endless variations and new and interpretations of Torah that are all MS, that are all coming from a different angle based on that person and the world they live in, and what's real for them in their world is very different. Rav Hirsch spoke. Rav Hirsch is a masterpiece, by the way. Very important. Sarah Schneer, who started the entire movement of girls' education, taught all her students Rav Hirsch's Torah. All her notes, all her lectures were from Rav Hirsch. So the whole thing started. The whole girls' education, the whole bringing it to the women who didn't have a Jewish education was Rav Hirsch. He spoke to a generation that was teetering of being lost completely. We think we're losing children. Everybody's losing in every generation. In fact, Rabbi Rakefet was here last week in Shari. He said that Rav Aaron Cutler and Rav Huttner and Lubavitch Rebbe were, all three of them, the only ones in their entire families that remained Shomer Shabbos. And from everybody, in fact, Heshi, my husband, had an incident recently at work where a man walks in and introduces himself as Zev Eger. I saw Rabbi Kiva Eger. He says, "Oh," he says, "that's a very important name in Judaism." As man was, he was a giant. He was a towering figure in Torah. He says, "Yes, I heard that my great grandfather was a big rabbi." So anyway, to make a long story short, Heshi suggested that they maybe learn something from Rabbi Kiva Eger. But then he came home and he said, "Actually, I better do a little more research." And it turns out that Zev Eger's mother was not Jewish at all. She was Cuban. And they had run there from the war. In other words, it's not us alone. How did I just get there? But in other words, you hear Torah Shebal Peh, how do we get there? We hear... Right, Torah Shneerer. That's right. Everybody speaks in their own way to deal with their situation and according to what's needed at that time, like Rav Meir Shapiro speaking today, and he's making these ideas of the Maharal and the Ramchal accessible and understandable to our generation. Now, the point here is that you hear the speaker too. In other words, Torah Shebal Peh, look, we have 24 Sifrei Tanakh. How many Sifrei Torah Shebal Peh are there? I'm not just talking about the Mishnah and the Gemara, but everything after that, all the Rishon, Nachon, like millions and new ones every day because there are new people. And everybody has their own angle. And as long as it fits in and it doesn't contradict anything, it's good. So Torah Shebal Peh is much more expansive. It includes everybody. It asks something from everybody. Everybody takes part in it. It's the process of Torah that leads to the Geula. It's the process of including everybody in Torah. And when we think about hearing, in Torah Shebal Peh, we hear more than what we know, more than just what's simple and obvious. And we begin to hear what's not spoken. And in here we have two other ideas that let us hear what isn't spoken, what is not spoken. It's again Kabbalistic ideas from the Ari, but he brings it down, and it's understandable. Yud Kei Vav Kei has 12 permutations, different orderings of the letters. Each month has a pasuk, or a verse, or a portion of a pasuk, in which you find those four letters either at the beginning of the word, really that's just one of Nisan, or in the other months, in different orders. Nisan has Yud Kei Vav Kei, has a pasuk where Yud Kei Vav Kei is in the beginning of the four words, and that's Yismachu Hashamayim V'Sagel Haaretz. The heavens should rejoice and be happy, and the earth should rejoice. That's from Tehillim, Tzadivav. All the other months, the Yud Kei Vav Keis are not in order and not necessarily in the beginning of the word. So, where do you think you find for Tammuz the permutation of Yud Kei Vav Kei? So, Chazal pick a pasuk, a portion of a pasuk from Megillas Esther. Or Haman says, Ze Einenu Shaveli, the last four letters of those words. Ze, He, Einenu Vav, Shave He Li Yud. Okay, they're not in order, but they're the four letters of Yud Kei Vav Kei. Now, in fact, they're backwards. Yud Kei Vav Kei is backwards. Where did that comment come from? And what do you hear? Because it's right. What do you hear in between those words? That's, you know, what else can we hear there in the spoken word? So think about it. Haman sees Mordechai, who doesn't bow down. And he says, everything I have is like worthless to me. Come and take it. Now, what was everything he had? He had more money than anyone alive. Okay? He was the wealthiest person alive. He had all the honor and power possible that a human being could have other than Achashverosh. He had all his children, right? Remember he told his wise men about Rov Banav, Oshro, his kavod, and his wealth, and his children. But not only did he have so much, he already had the Jewish people in his pocket. They were already dead. They were already condemned to death. The decree had gone out. Mordechai was already a dead man that Haman himself controlled. He already had Mordechai's life. So what possibly could disturb him about Mordechai being alive, which they were all going to be killed anyway, and he already decreed this because Mordechai wouldn't bow. And so he saw Mordechai one more time not bow. He knew it. He owned him. And because of that, he looked at everything he had as completely worthless. Now, when you see something, and you see it so incorrectly, you see so much power and wealth and prestige and children and everything, and you see it as nothing, what just happened with a sense of sight? What happens is, this is an example of tamos, of how bad it could get, how off our sense of perception is, how off our ability to evaluate reality is, where we're so blind. That one thing blinds us, and we can't see anything correctly. This is tamos. This is how far it can go when we can't see. By the way, haman min ha-Torah minayin, ha-min ha-eitz, what did the Nachash say? Your eyes are going to be opened. That's not a blessing. That's a curse. In other words, you're going to see things from your own perspective. So wrong, so out of touch with reality. And what's the furthest extent, Haman? That is the curse of misseeing things, of not keeping our eyes open and seeing the words of Hashem and everything. We have, our responsibility is that Hashem spoke. The world is Hashem's speech. Everything we see should describe to us another aspect of Hashem's speech, not something else that we concocted in our own minds. This is vital. It is vital to understand from this pasuk, Chazal are telling us, the extent of the distortion of sight, the extent of how we misevaluate reality, and that's associated with tamos. And that's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name also, the name Yud Kei Vav Kei backwards, in terms of. Where do we find the name of Hashem? And here, if you happen to have a chumash in front of you, in Sefer Devarim, Perek Chav Zayin, Pasuk Tes. Remember, Devarim is Moshe's speeches, page 1072. Moshe's speeches to Klai Yisrael before he died. Now, here's where we find Hashem's name. It's in the beginning of the word, 1072, Pasuk 9. This name of Yud Kei Vav Kei is in the beginning of four words, and they're found in this pasuk. And they relate to the month of Av. This is the pasuk. Of course, it's going to have to do with hearing. And it relates to the month of Av. Vayedaber Moshe, vahakohanim, halevim, el kol Yisrael lemar. Moshe and the kohanim and the levim spoke to all of Yisrael, saying, haskes, we'll explain that word in a second, ushma Yisrael hayom. Look at the hey, vav, yud, and right? That's Hashem's name. Haskes. And then there's a line there, by the way. There's a psik. You see the line between haskes? Haskes. We're going to say what that means. Ushma, and then hear. Something comes before hearing. How do you ensure that you hear what you're seeing correctly? Haskes, ushma Yisrael, hayom, today. Hazeh, this day. Nihiyesa la'am la'Hashem Elokecha. This defines the seeds of salvation in the Chorban. This is how to hear correctly. This is how to be today, which means yesterday doesn't matter at all, how to be Am Hashem Elokecha. Okay? How to become again today. The day of the Chorban itself, the nation of Hashem. How to renew the bris. Haskes, stop, Ushma. First, there are two efforts that have to be undertaken before you can hear correctly. Remember what we said about hearing correctly? That you see something, and what you see speaks correctly of its creator. That the Dovar is a Dibor. And it's something, and then the misinterpretation doesn't come in between. So Haas case, Chazal say the following. Here. Gemara says here, the Talmud says, Haas case. Haas case u'shema Yisrael, Haas. Haas. Va'achar kach kases. What is Haas? Haas va'achar kach kases. First Haas, then kases. That's Haas case. Shtok kamo vayahas kolev. Quiet. Just like when kolev, when everybody was beginning to, you know, turmoil was ensuing when they heard the spies' report. It says, vayahas kolev es ami, quieted them down. Shtok, be quiet. Vehaazon l'shmoatecha, ad shetehe shgura b'picha, v'af al pisha enam yushev eslach. In other words, has means first quiet. Quiet down what? Our own voices. Quiet down our own voices. Quiet. And hear, learn, incline our ears, Shema Yisrael, to what Hashem is saying. Quiet, step back, take our own voices out of it. That's Selim. And hear what Hashem is saying. Even if it doesn't make complete sense to you yet, hear, learn Torah as Torah. Don't let anything interfere with it. Specifically our own voices, our own interpretations, our own perception of things. Just hear. After what we learn Torah, and if we hear Torah for what Torah is, then kases means start dissecting it. Start dissecting it. Then start asking questions, trying to understand it. But the first stage is to pull ourselves out of it. Hear, quiet, be still, and hear. By the way, those, you know, cultures that come from us, Avraham, we spoke about this, Kedma, remember? But they don't have our Torah and our mitzvot. They put all their effort into this process. Quiet. Still. Hear. Take yourselves out of it. Take out the ego. Take out the self. Meditation. Right? It's all the whole, you know, a lot of the Buddhism's, you know, which comes, the Eastern disciplines come from the truth that Avraham conveyed to them. But we said minus. They didn't take upon themselves the actual mitzvot, the actions. But this is a core idea. Has, quiet. Pull ourselves out. He learned Torah without agendas, without our own interpretations. Then when it's rooted, and that's the way we see things, then dissect and start to ask questions. And then you'll be here. You'll be able to hear. Has, right? Then it says, Has case, stop, Mushema Yisrael. And then you'll hear. And you know what you're going to hear? You know how we're going to interpret reality when we've done that? Shema Yisrael, Hayom, Hazeh, Nehiyeh Salaam, Lashem Elokecha. You know what you're going to hear? That today, this day of Chorban, any day that we find ourselves teetering away from that, if we just stop and start to hear correctly one more time, then we'll find that this day is the day that we initiate a bris with Hashem. We enter once again into a relationship with Hashem that's secure. In other words, we come out of Golos. We go into Geula. That's what we'll hear. That's how we'll interpret life. That's how we'll see an opportunity in everything. No Yerida is a real Yerida. Forever. No mistake is a mistake that utterly makes that person unsalvageable forever. Everything is a learning experience. As long as we stop ourselves when we see that what we're seeing, okay, does not speak of its true creator and its true source and its true reason, but we're seeing something and we're giving it our own interpretations. Everything must speak. Everything in this world must speak correctly of HaKadosh Baruch Hu created it. You know how the children come home from school and they learn that every blade of grass has a malach, say, grow and grow, 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 grow. That's what we mean. We look at nature like them and they say, somebody's speaking. And then we look at every aspect of our lives, the parts we understand and we don't understand, and our attempt is that somebody is speaking through this. And to connect everything to the true origin, the true speech. And that's what we mean when we say that the luchos and the words of, that were in the Luchos were one. They were engraved through and through. They were not written on it. So that's what we contemplate here in the 3 weeks, especially Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av is the Pizor, the Golos. And that's why everyone asks, if you know the breaking of the Luchos is the reason for the Golos, right? One lead led to the next. The lack of seeing and hearing correctly is why we're scattered and enslaved and out of our land. So why is Tisha B'Av like a more severe day? Because only when a person actually looks at themselves and says, I'm in a state of Chorban, I'm in a state of Gullus, I'm all over the place, I'm like, you know, weak and subject to everything that moves me. and I'm not living my life by those ordering principles that I know are true, that I know I want to live by and that I've committed to live by, but somehow can't seem to be consistent about it. And so I misinterpret everything. So when a person sees themselves in their state, that's when they begin to take action to repair that. And it's always repairable. It's always repairable. It's simply the skill, which we do in day-to-day life, of seeing something and hearing, seeing in the davar the dibur, and then seeing the dibur of Hashem, which is, we all know what it is, and then beginning to see everything, vayishama, as all part of that same dibur. That's what we do spiritually in Ruchnis. That's what physics is working with now. In the Bria itself, in the physical Bria, we're part of, you know, the most progressive trend in thinking. So this Tisha B'Av should be for us a yantiv. We should all celebrate it as a yantiv. And I wish everybody, if, you know, in the meantime, a meaningful fast, if not. Have a good week, everybody.
Question for you.
Yeah.
Kalev and who else is with him?